Hope Show.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, here we are at the Naval Testing Station at Inyokern, here deep in the Mojave Desert. And in all my years as a golfer, I've never seen so many people in a sand trap. Yes, sir. Can you imagine that? A Navy base in the desert. This is quite a novelty. It's the first time I was ever piped aboard a sand dune. Healthy place. The climate up here is wonderful. Of course, they do get a little wind. That's Inyokern talk for a junior is missing. He must have dragged his anchor again. I arrived during a sandstorm. I went up to a sailor and said, "Can you tell me where I'll find the town of Ridgecrest?" He said, "We won't know till the wind stops blowing." One of the sailors here told me about the only thing you can say for a sandstorm is that if you're kissing a girl with too much lipstick, it keeps you from skidding. Quite a housing shortage up here. I saw a sign that read room for rent, suitable for 2 civilians or 8 jackrabbits. I saw another sign that read for rent, 2 bedrooms and bath, orange colored sky. Inyokern, when they sing home in the rains, they really mean it. I met a guy who was sleeping in a gas stove. The other night he fell asleep with a cigarette in his hand. Anybody see a guided missile wearing striped pajamas? But you can tell the atom bomb tests were held in this part of the country. All the coyotes around here have cotton in their ears. The firing range this morning, and I saw one of the newer type rockets streaking across the desert at 1,000 miles an hour. It had a remote control antenna on the back and a sailor on the front trying to make San Bernardino on a 6-hour Liberty pass.
Gentlemen, the famous Hollywood Boulevard is even more glamorous than ever. Bob and I were in the throng of sightseers just this afternoon. Oh, gee, Rob. Hollywood Boulevard is more beautiful than ever.
Sure is.
I thought you came down here to look at the decorations.
Well, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I don't understand it. I wiggle in the same place she does, and everybody thinks my suspenders are busted.
There's Margaret Whiting looking in the window of that department store. Hiya, Mag.
Toys. You know, I'm always fascinated by the toys.
Yeah, look at that electric train, Maggie. Gee, when I was a kid, I never had a train.
When you were a kid, neither did Santa Fe.
Now, thank you to keep your mouth closed, you and your 32 teeth.
What's that supposed to mean? Everybody has 32 teeth.
All in front? Where are you headed for, Margaret?
Well, I'm going to the Historama display.
What's that?
Well, it's an exhibition. All about the movies that have been made in Hollywood during the last 50 years. Would you like to go see it?
I don't have to. I have a television set.
Well, this is the Historama show right here, Bob. Come on, let's go in.
Boy, look at these wonderful displays, huh?
Yeah, look at those costumes that were worn in the old pictures.
Yeah, there's a pair of snowshoes from Nanook of the North. And look, there's Dorothy Lamour's original sarong.
That's a sarong? Gee, what a funny shape.
Yeah, that's because of the work it had to do. It had to show her and still cover the brain off it.
There's a lot of movie people in here looking at the displays. Here comes Glenn Ford.
Yeah, hiya, Glenn.
Bob.
Nice to see you, Glenn.
Nice to see you, Bob.
You're looking fine.
You're looking good yourself.
Hey, I saw your picture and I thought it was great.
Yeah, I saw your picture. I thought it was terrific.
Well, let's not stand here arguing. You know, Glenn, you're the only leading man in Hollywood that I envy.
You envy me? For what?
Those leading ladies you get in your pictures. Every time I see you on the screen, you're kissing Rita Hayworth or Lana Turner. Oh. What a wonderful type of slavery.
Well, it's just a part of business, Bob. And when it comes to girls, well, I can take them or leave them.
I'm not proud. Where do you leave them?
You know, Bob, the grass is always greener in the other fellow's yard.
How do you mean the grass is greener?
Well, look at your leading ladies, Jane Russell, Rhonda Fleming, Joan Fontaine, Arlene Dahl. I mean, what's wrong with them?
Nothing, but I don't seem to have the right lawnmower.
Yeah, you certainly were all right in those love scenes in your picture with Arlene Dahl.
You liked them, huh?
Yeah, judging by appearances, so did you. Hey, confidentially, Bob, did you get a kick out of kissing Arlene? Hmm?
Yeah, it was the only way the director could get me to stop.
Just come on in, Bob. I mean, let's look around this drama display. Huh?
Okay, come on, Bill. Come on, Maggie.
Say, fellas, here's a turban that Rudolph Valentino wore. Gee, I still remember him in the sheet.
Yeah, so do I.
So do I.
So do I.
Gosh, when Valentino was a star, I was just a kid.
So was I.
So was I.
Let's get to the next display.
Look at this over here. It's a bathtub that Anna Hill took her famous milk bath in.
Yeah, it's also the one Spencer Tracy used in Boomtown.
Yeah, how can you tell?
By the rings in it, the mark isn't hers.
Hey, how'd you get started in the movies, Bob?
Well, my first job came when a call went out for a young leading man who knew his way around a theater. It turned out to be a very romantic part.
And you were the leading man in the picture?
No, I was an usher in the balcony. I started in vaudeville. When I first came out, I signed a contract for $100 a week.
Well, that isn't much money, Hope.
I know, but it was all I could afford for it. Say, you don't mind if I dress up an old joke, do you?
Of course not. Wear anything you want.
Down, Groucho. You know, Glenn, a lot of the great names you see here at Historama got their start in vaudeville. Will Rogers, Marie Dressler, even John Barrymore worked in vaudeville.
That's wonderful training, all right. I had to get my training in summer stock. Did you ever do any summer stock, Bob?
No, the only summer stock I worked on had four legs and four faucets. And it didn't take talent, just pull.
And you really milked that one, didn't you?
You know, Glenn, this Historama show gives me a wonderful idea.
Yeah, what's that, Bob?
Why don't you drop around to my radio program tonight? We'll put on a history of moving pictures from the time they were born right up till today.
Oh, gee, Bob, that's a pretty ambitious project, huh?
Not for me, Glenn. There's a side of my character you don't know. Underneath, I'm a very serious guy. I never do anything by halves. When I'm interested in something, I learn everything I can about it. I'm a student of anything I undertake. I'm a real student.
Bob, we gotta leave. Quick, I just saw...
Jaja Gabor.
She's going down the street the other way.
So long, Glenn.
What are you rushing off for?
Can't help it. The school bell just rang. Come in, Maggie, and do a little number for these nice people. What is it?
No Other Love, Bob.
Here is, with a special guest from the studio audience, Bob Hope.
To our little jam session right here tonight. It says, "This is Carrie Schmidt of Bellflower, California." And it says on your card, "I can match noses with Bob Hope." You can match noses with me?
Well, let me see. You got a little bit ahead of me.
No. Hey, no kidding. I didn't get a good look at you. You do have one, don't you? Well, isn't that sweet? Oh. Why don't you play with my tip? I'll play with yours. Go ahead. No fair, just the lower slope. Just the lower. You know, I'm getting like this more than golf. No, that's wonderful, though, Carrie. Isn't that nice? Did you, is yours natural, or did you get yours in an accident, too? No, that's very, very nice, and I've got to...
Oh, it's nice. You have sort of a convertible. You can...
Let me see how you'd look like that.
Oh, no.
Say...
Nose,
no, I think you're nice, and I really appreciate that. I think you can match noses, but yours
sort of goes with your face, though. Sort of blends in, you know, while mine looks more like something from the picture Tommy Hawk. But I do think you have matched me, although you're a little bit prettier. You're a little rather prettier side. Mine is sort of, don't you think? Well, listen, I appreciate you coming up here, and I'm going to send you one of my little buttons, because now you're a member of the Ski Snoot Club. That's Miss Carrie Smith,
Bellflower, California. Thank you.
Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, Bob and his guest, Glenn Ford, are going to present a short history of the movie.
Are you ready, Glenn?
Sure, I'm Bob. Might be very interesting. Now, let's begin our history of pictures in the year 1896. The place, a little shack in the countryside in Orange, New Jersey.
Gentlemen, I have called you together to witness my greatest invention. When I turn on this switch, a series of images will appear on this screen.
Yes, exactly what is this invention, Mr. Edison?
By projecting a series of pictures at the rate of 16 per second, the images blend and the pictures will appear to move. Do not be frightened. Lee, I'll turn on the projector.
Where the blue night is the dawn of the day.
Nauseating, isn't it? Well, gentlemen, what do you think?
It's flummery, just a toy for children.
Oh, but Mr. Vandergill, I was counting on your financial support. You backed Robert Fulton.
Mr. Fulton has a steamboat. You, sir, have a strip of celluloid. Do you think the people will like your movies better than Mr. Fulton's invention?
Oh, I'm sure they will, sir.
Oh, what makes you think so?
Well, it's obvious. Who ever heard of going necking with your girl to a drive-in steamboat? How about it, Mr. Vandergill?
Sorry, Edison, not a penny.
Oh, pardon me while I tend to this other experiment.
Egad! Gentlemen, you can all get out. Now I don't need your money.
You don't need our money? What do you mean?
The movies are self-supporting. I just invented popcorn.
No kidding, Bob. Is that the way movies really started?
Well, it's the way my writers think they started. Now let's get on with it, Glenn.
Okay. All right, now we come to the year 1903. We bring you the first silent picture.
A very touching story. It was called The Face on the Barroom Floor. Or The Last Time I Saw Harris. But the flickers were catching on. Nickelodeons were opening all over the country.
Yes, the movies were becoming a great big money operation. In 1910, under a palm tree in Hollywood, a historic event took place.
How'd you do?
How'd you do?
How'd you do?
What was that?
The meeting of Metro, Goldwyn, and Mayer.
Oh, I'm sorry, Leo. We almost left you out. What's next, Glenn?
Well, a big step in movie history, Bob, the talkies. In 1927, the movies learned to talk. Now, there was a certain amount of technical difficulty, but they talked.
Darling, we're alone at that.
Isn't it a beautiful night? Look up there at the moon.
Sounds like the moon is full.
Please, darling, please.
Yes, my love.
Whisper to me the words that I long to hear.
All right, my dear.
Say that today and you get arrested.
Tell us,
flocked to Hollywood from all over the world. In 1930, the voice of a gay Frenchman became a great favorite with American moviegoers.
Every little breeze seemed to whisper Louise. A bird in a tree seemed to whisper Louise. I am Maurice Chevalier. I am a great lover. All over America, wherever I go, I am pursued by millions of women. Oh, they kiss me, they squeeze me, they hug me. It is very exciting. I am very thrilled. Oh, but I am very tired.
Oh, yes. So is your accent.
It is so good.
And another Frenchman was endearing himself to American women, the intriguing Pepe La Mocha.
Hello. I am Charles Boyer. Come with me to the Casbah.
All the women, they come with me to the Casbah. The Casbah is loaded.
Why don't they go home?
Oh, the world must know that I am the most romantic Frenchman in the world.
Oh, mais non. No, no. I, Maurice Chevalier, am the most romantic.
Oh, I prove to you Charles Boyer is the most romantic. Go like this. You see, my lower lip, she sticks out 3 feet further than yours. Sticks out so far, I cannot go out in the rain or my mouth will fill up. I'm the only man who can kiss a girl on the lips and the back of the neck at the same time.
When it comes to romance, you are nothing compared with me, the great Chevalier.
Oh, bah, you are just a clown in a straw hat.
And you are just a saucer face with eyes like two poached eggs. Chevalier has many talents. I not only sing, I dance. You watch.
Help, where am I?
You fool, you have fallen into my lower lip.
One of the great westerns of this year was a picture called Under the Tonto Rim, west of the Pecos, along the Rio Grande, neath Arizona skies, in old Wyoming, in the Red River Valley, where the covered wagon meets the riders of the purple sage, I've Got Spurs, the jingle, jangle, jingle. Of course, it wasn't released under that title.
Well, what was it called?
Shane. And now let's salute the horse operas. Anything in particular you'd like to do, Glenn?
Well, I tell you, I've always wanted to play one of the James boys.
Well, that's what we'll do. Bill, step in here and help us, will you?
Okay.
Oh, we are the Jane boys, so happy and gay.
I'm Frank.
I'm Jesse.
I'm Fotheringay.
Fotheringay?
Yes, I'm your British brother.
Fellas, the James boys.
That's right, we're the James boys. Who are you?
I'm the sheriff of this county, and I got a message for all three of you.
What is it?
This.
Ooh, right through my head. Ah, right through my chest.
You, Fotheringay?
I can't tell you, but you made a big hole in my tea bag.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Armed Forces Radio and Television Service presents the Bob Hope Show with Les Brown and his band of renown. And yours truly, Bill Goodwin. And now here he is, Bob Hope.
Thank you very much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. No, but I've just returned from a trip through Minnesota and Canada, and I'll never know why we criticize our California weather. It was almost as cold up there. No, I had to make the whole trip with one arm down in the baggage compartment. My hand was frozen to my suitcase. I played Saskatchewan. That's pretty tricky, but once you learn how to say it, it pays off. You never again have to buy dental floss. Of course, some people never learn how to say Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. One guy tried for years, but he couldn't say it. He finally did the only thing he could do. He moved to Montreal. Well, Saskatoon is way up in northern Canada, but it's easy to get there. You can go by plane, train, dog sled, or make a wrong turn on the freeway. When I arrived, they gave me a wonderful welcome, but I didn't like the way the papers wrote it up. The headline in the Saskatoon Daily News said, American ham arises from Canadian bacon. It's pretty cold up there. I saw a Pontiac and the Indian was wearing earmuffs. White-haired Indian. I got back here just in time to go to all the big department stores around town and autograph copies of my book, Have Tucks, Will Travel. And it was a lot of fun, although I didn't like the attitude of one department store manager. When I arrived to autograph the books, he looked at my nose and said, I see you brought your ballpoint with you. Autographing copies of your book is a favor you have to do for the publisher. Well, it's not exactly a favor. It's part of the deal. Let's face it, we have to get the money back somehow. One kid was standing there for an hour just staring at me. I said, aren't you interested in reading my life story? He said, no, I'd rather watch it on Dragnet. But my book is really exciting. It tells the story of a poor barefoot boy in Cleveland who was determined to be a comedian regardless of his talent. And I'm sure you'll like Half Tucks Will Travel. I tell all about my education, all the awards I've won in show business, and all the beautiful girls who are crazy about me. Page 2 is exciting, too. The New York Times printed 2 reviews of my book. The first one said my writing ranked with O. Henry. The second one said, not the author, the candy bar. One of the editors of Reader's Digest phoned me and asked if my book could be boiled down. I said it could. He said, that's fine with all this smog. We hate to throw it in the incinerator. Jack Benny read my book with tears in his eyes from strain. He was trying to finish it before the clerk made him put it down. I still have a few books left, so if any of you haven't got your copy, please see me after the show. I'd love to get my car back in the garage. Thank you very much. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce our guest for this evening, Mr. David Niven, right here.
Well, thank you, Bob. That's a very nice introduction. But why the mister?
Well, David, I thought it was appropriate. I consider you a perfect gentleman.
Well?
A distinguished actor.
Well?
And besides that, I like you.
Yes.
Easier. I'll hide your tweed monocle and you'll be drummed out of the Deborah Carr fan club. You'll never get into the Huntington Hartford here.
Well, now that we've been exchanged a few unpleasant pleasantries, what type of show are we going to do, Bob?
Well, I was just thinking, David, you know, they're giving out Academy Awards for the movies, Emmy Awards for television, but radio doesn't get its share of recognition. And, you know, radio will soon be celebrating its 50th birthday.
50th birthday? Hmm? Lupton Bell been around that long?
Yes, he went to medical school with Joyce Jordan.
I gather we're going to do the history of radio tonight, Bob.
That's right, David. We're going all the way back to 1900, when Hollywood was just desolate, flat country.
Then the movies came along, radio came along, and Hollywood became the glamour capital of the world.
Yeah, and then Santa Anita came along, and it became flat country again.
Well, David, shall we plunge in and tell the story of the Magic Wireless from its infancy right up to today?
No, I'm all set, Bob.
Let's go. Music, lass. Radio had its first glimmerings away back at the turn of the century. In the science laboratory at Yale University, an excited young student rushed up to his professor and said,
"Look, Professor, I've found it."
"What is it, my boy?"
"Oh, I've created a vacuum tube with a filament that emits electrons across the magnetic field so that high-frequency modulation up to 18,000 megacycles causes sonic alternating audio amplification."
"I'm sorry, folks, but what else could I do with him?"
That young student, of course, was Lee DeForest. On May 1st, 1903, radio was born. DeForest invented the Audion tube.
And on May 2nd, 1903, radio received its greatest setback.
"What's that?"
"DeForest dropped the tube."
Lee DeForest continued his labors on the electron tube, and in 1905, at a meeting of the stockholders of his company, he made an announcement of tremendous importance.
"Gentlemen, I'm happy to say that I've finally perfected the first radio tube. Here it is before you. A huge rectangular tube, and only one thing is stopping us from putting it into mass production for use in radio."
"What's that?"
"We can't get Arthur Godfrey's picture off it."
"Bob, how could Arthur Godfrey's picture possibly be on the radio tube? Is that historically correct?"
"It's pretty close, David. My writers looked the whole thing up in the racing form."
"I'll be kind to suit that, Kenny. Well, what happened next, Bob?"
"Aerials began appearing on rooftops, and it was dangerous, David. I'll never forget my Aunt Minnie got a couple of electric wires crossed one night."
"What happened?"
"She became the first woman in Cleveland to have a crew cut." "What's the next milestone of radio, David?"
"The presidential election of 1924. Here's the first president to speak on radio."
"Thank you, Calvin Coolidge."
"The world's fastest human is interviewed after running the 4-minute mile."
"Thank you, Roger Bannister." "Or Rin Tin Tin." "But getting back to our story, in the 1920s and 30s, radio grew by leaps and bounds."
"Yes, everybody was tuned in. You were entertained by such famous names in sport as Babe Ruth, Jack Dempsey,
Errol Flynn."
"Yes, the average family could sit home in the parlor, switch on a receiving set, and hear the great stars of the era."
"Crosby sure sounded good in those days."
"Radio soon became a giant of the entertainment field.
It brought us fine drama, the best music, great comedians. In 1931, we were all thrilled by the lively singing of a young man named Eddie Cantor."
"You knew Susie like I know Susie, too. Ooh, ooh." "I'm sorry, that's the best I can do."
That was Eddie Cantor, strained through Anthony Heaton's Homburg.
About the same time, another great star filled the nation.
That's right. He's now known as Evelyn and her magic violin.
You know, Bob, I never realized there was so much to radio.
Oh, these are only a few highlights in the field of entertainment. Radio was also used in industry and commerce, and it played a very important part in World War I.
World War I. Let's do some of that.
Okay, music, Les.
The time, the closing hours of the war, November 10th, 1918. The German armies are collapsing on all fronts. For the first time, radio is used as a means of military communication.
"Achtung! Achtung! General Ludendorff calling General Pfaffenhausen. Come in, Rudy."
Jawohl, I am here. Can you hear me?"
"Nein, I can't hear a thing. What's the matter? You're talking to a Wiener Schnitzel or something?"
"What do you want, Herrmann?"
"Something's gone kaflooey." I can't find the army anywhere.
Me neither. What do you suspect, my general?
Oh, I don't know, but something is definitely verstunken in for this. Oh, 26,000 men, where could they all? Where could they all disappear to?
Oh, I know. I know where they might be.
Where?
Mademoiselle Fernand Mathieu's farm.
No, I called her up, Dink. There. Now, wait a minute.
Woody,
if we can't find the army, you just gave me a great idea.
But,
Mademoiselle from Armata.
I'll get mine helmet and go with you. What happened next in radio, Bob?
Well, we'll continue our history in a few minutes, David, after this number by a star of present-day radio, Margaret Whiting, singing Melody of Love.
That's Bill Goodwin, you know, someone once said humor is the true democracy, and that's why we Americans can smile when we tell the stories of the legendary heroes who helped to build our country's great institutions and industries. Like old Pecos Bill of the cattle industry. Now, when Bill was a year old, he was crawling around the ground one day when a swarm of mosquitoes swooped down. Bill crawled under a fat-rendering kettle, and when the first mosquito hit it, his stinger went clear through. Quick as a flash, Bill whipped an axe out of his diaper, and he bent the stinger back like a nail. He did the same to the other mosquitoes till the outside of the kettle looked like a plum pudding filled with raisins. When Bill was 14, he invented the lariat, the Roundup, and the branding iron. And his special brand has become the heritage for all American cattlemen, IXL. Yes, it is a democracy which lets us tell stories of such legendary heroes with a twinkle in our eyes and a chuckle in our throats. So long as we continue to laugh together as a people, ladies and gentlemen, we will live together as a nation.
Well, Bob, shall we continue our history of radio?
Yes, David. Now let's look at radio as an advertising medium.
You mean commercial?
That's right. And here's the man who invented the first commercial jingle.
Mary, Mary, quite contrary. How does your garden grow? With silver bells and cockle shells? What? No big at all?
Well, Professor Corona, right? You're the man who invented rhyming commercials, Professor.
That's right, Hope. I'm the first man who ever found a rhyme for orange.
Well, that's remarkable, Professor. How did you rhyme orange?
Squeeze it. And I rhyme juice with spruce.
Professor, you're off your trolley.
Yes, but I'm not worried.
Why not?
I've got a transfer.
Professor, do you really know anything about radio commercials?
Everything. I introduced the paper-made pen sweethearts to each other. And single-handed, I put over one of the most popular products on the market today, Chibaba Chibaba cigarettes.
Chibaba Chibaba cigarettes? I've never heard of them.
Of course you have. Why, four out of five doctors who smoke them say, quote... quote.
Are they good, Professor?
There's no cigarette in the world like a Chibaba. It doesn't have any ordinary cotton filter or a nylon filter. Absolutely no harmless ingredients can get through the filter of a Chibaba.
Why, what's it made of?
Cement.
Tell me, Colonna, did you ever jump out of a window and land on your head?
Why, no, don't think I ever have. Pardon me a moment. What do you know? It's fun.
Kelowna, you're two steps below an idiot.
Don't drool. And au revoir.
So long, Brush Brush.
Well, what's next, Bob?
Well, disc jockeys have become very important in radio, David. Let's show the folks how those happy record spinners operate. Music left.
Now, for you early morning listeners,
Flakies, the breakfast food that bites back, presents the Rise and Shine Boys.
Hello, everybody. Hello. We're here to say hello, so hello. Hello, everybody. Hello. We don't mean au revoir, but hello. We don't mean au revoir, and we don't mean toodaloo. And now we're trying to say it. Hello to you and you. So hello, everybody. Hello. Hello, hello, hello.
Second chorus.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Hello, 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 hello.
That's funny.
What happened?
They hung up.
Well, good morning, Bob.
Oh, good morning, David. Well, here we are, folks, the Rise and Shine Boys. Good morning, everybody. It's 5 a.m., but the weatherman says we'll have a beautiful day, folks.
What is the weather report, Bob?
6 below and more snow. Which reminds me, folks, are you prepared for a cold snap? Get a suit of Zingelmeyer's long underwear today.
The only long underwear with the electric flap.
one a.m. Folks, why wake up with a grouch in the morning? Sleep alone. Come on, sleep. Come on, sleepyhead. Throw the covers off. Now open your eyes and take a good look around. Are you in the right house?
And now for the first joke of the day. Tell me, Bob, how do you make antifreeze?
I don't know, David. How do you make antifreeze?
I'd have woolen pajamas.
Oh, we're coming up.
And now, the makers of Woo-Poo, the dog biscuit that tastes like a cat. The makers of Woo-Poo bring you the news.
Hollywood, California. Yasha Heifetz is playing Beethoven tonight at the Hollywood Bowl. The winner will meet Bobo Olsen. And now a word about Dr. Niven's reducing method. Step in, doctor.
Thank you. Attention, ladies over 300 pounds. Do you have the feeling you're being followed? You are. It's you.
This problem, by all means, try Dr. Niven's reducing method. It's simple, no pills, no diet, no exercise. Once a week, Dr. Niven comes to your house and beats you with a rubber hose. And now your favorite platter spinners bring you the first record of the day. What do we play for the folks, David?
The song that's number one all over the country. I've got those, my baby done left me, she ran off with another guy. I feel so bad, if I ever catch her, I'll break her neck. Blues.
Well, dedicate yourself to the boys down at Firehouse number 7. Don't forget, fellas, dab a little of Mother Murphy's brass polish on the knees of your pants, and your fire pole will always be bright and gleaming.
Now we'll play the record.
Whoops, too late. Our time is up. This is the Rise and Shine Boys signing off and saying...
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. We mean goodbye. Care
of the disc jockeys, and I hope they forgive us.
You know, Bob, we can't do a history of radio without bringing in the dear old BBC.
British radio? Good idea. Here we go, David. Some Piccadilly music left.
Well, how do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is the BBC commencing another evening's broadcasting.
Our first offering of the evening is another visit with the master detective, David Niven, Private Eyeball, and Gentleman Bounder.
Thanks, Joe.
Before tonight's chapter, a word about our sponsor, Fotheringay's Mutton. That mutton that makes you a glutton. Ladies, next time you want to serve something delicious, remember that only Fotheringay's Mutton contains that unusual locked-in aroma.
It has to be locked in once you got out and killed Fotheringay.
Remember, friends, there are many imitators of this fine product, but Fotheringay's is the only mutton that contains genuine mutt.
That's right. It comes in three delicious flavors, orange, raspberry, and cocker spaniel.
For tonight's adventure with David Niven, Private Eyeball.
How do you do? My name is David Niven, Private Eye. I was sitting in my office today when the door opened and she came in. Believe me when I tell you, she was most captivating. She had honey blonde hair, blue eyes, and the deepest dimples I'd ever seen. In fact, her dimples were so deep that when she smiled, her face turned inside out. Suddenly, this heavenly creature spoke.
My husband has just been murdered.
What?
Yes, I stabbed him 6 times and then shot him through the head.
I see. Who do you suspect?
I've come to you to help me to, as they say in America, beat the rap.
Well, very well. Bring in the rap and I shall beat it. Just one moment, dear lady. I'm on to you and I shall head to report you to Scotland Yard.
No, no, you can't. Don't you see I'm in love with you? I insist that you kiss me. Take my lips.
No, thanks very much. I have a pair of my own.
But I insist. Take my lips.
Well, all right, but I shall have to wear them on my watch chain. Now, romance won't help you, my dear. I'm going to turn you in, and they shall send you up the river.
You wouldn't say that if you'd kissed me once.
I'm sorry, you're going up the river.
Come here. Well?
All ashore is going ashore.
You cad. How dare you kiss my wife?
Your wife? I thought you were dead.
I was, but now I'm alive again.
Well, how could that be possible?
I ate an extra large portion of Fotheringay's delicious mutton.
That just about wraps up our little saga of radio, and I hope somebody appreciates it.
Mr. Hope, Mr. Niven, I've been listening to your show upstairs in my office, and it was wonderful.
Oh, thank you very much. Who are you?
Well, I'm the president of the NBC Network, and I want to thank you. This history of radio you've just put on will bring us millions and millions of new fans.
Well, that's fine. And you're the president of the radio network?
No, television.
With Les Brown and his band of renown, and yours truly, High Aberback. Our special guests, Jack Kirkwood, Peggy Lee, Maureen Calvay. And here he is, Bob Hope.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Well, here I am. Relatives everywhere. Well, here I am. Never before in history have Americans had so many different forms of entertainment. Radio, television, movies. And everybody's so smart about entertainment now. I told my kids a bedtime story the other night. When I was through, they said, Daddy, why don't you fix up the ending and try it on us again tomorrow night? When the kids aren't listening to radio and TV, they're reading comic books. Comic books are having an effect on my family. My little nephew runs around the house with a big cigar in his mouth, a hat pulled down over his eyes, and his diapers pulled up under his chin. But the comic books are demoralizing the kids. The other day, a 2-year-old put a gun to his nurse's back and grunted, "Who are you buying your pablum from?" And, of course, one of the greatest mediums of entertainment is the drive-in movies. The wonderful thing about them is you're never disappointed. If you don't like the movie and you don't like the girl you're with, you can still have a fascinating evening just by looking in the other cars. Oh, you've all been there, huh? I asked the manager of one drive-in theater, when a heavy fog comes in, do you have to give a refund to the people who leave? He said, who leaves? Just proves there's all kinds of entertainment. Say, according to the latest figures, the fastest growing area in the world is a place right here in Los Angeles called the San Fernando Valley. In 1920, the population in the valley was 20,000. Today, it's over 500,000. Population has grown so that people in the valley go past pet shops just to sneer at the rabbits.
No, the growth is phenomenal. Where yesterday there was nothing but a farm and a little house out in back, today there's a family living in a little house out in back. Of course, most people want to move to the valley on account of its amazing climate. No matter how hot it is in the daytime, at night you can always get pneumonia. And the real estate people are selling houses like hotcakes. They have to. That's what they're made of. Of course, no home in the valley. Are you through with that? No home in the valley is complete without a patio with a barbecue. For you Easterners, I better explain that a barbecue is an incinerator with a press agent. But there's nothing like the satisfaction of owning your own home in the valley. As you stroll through your house and around your land, you get a strange feeling. It's almost as though you hear music. You are the collector from the Bank of America singing, "I'm Walking Behind You." A lot of the Hollywood stars have homes in the valley. Gene Autry has a big ranch. In fact, I met Gene just the other day at the general store. He was in buying some hubcaps for his horse. Frank Sinatra has a lovely place. You can tell it was built especially for him. He's got the only bathtub with built-in water wings and a soup strainer over the drain. But you know, the San Fernando Valley has been written about in songs and books. I'd like to close with this poem written by the poet laureate of Burbank. He writes, "O San Fernando Valley, O San Fernando Valley, the whole world stands agog. Where else do the earthquakes rock you to sleep tucked in a blanket of smog?" Is one of the really great stylists of song, the lovely Peggy Lee.
What's going on here at your house?
Well, you know, I bought this place 15 years ago. Some real estate man really took me. I just found out the whole place is built on a swamp.
On a swamp? Are you sure?
Yeah, every night a guy walks through my bedroom looking for Chloe.
Kidding.
Oh, aside from that, I want to modernize the whole place. I'm even putting in continuous air conditioning.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Well, the old method wasn't too bad.
Oh, Bob, walking around with ice cubes in your mouth, breathing on people.
Incidentally, on your way in, did you notice that 9-hole golf course I'm having put in?
Yes, it looks beautiful.
Well, I know it's going to improve my game. When it's finished, I'll really be able to sink that ball.
I know. I saw the men putting the magnets in each hole.
Well, we just use those when I play for money. But let me show you around, Peggy.
Oh, I love it, Bob. Bob, what's all this over here?
Oh, those are some new souvenirs for my trophy case. I've collected all kinds of things on my travels.
Gosh, look at this. A Japanese kimono, an Alaskan totem pole, and a baseball autographed by the Cleveland Indians.
No comment.
Well, they did better than Pittsburgh, didn't they?
Pittsburgh? Are you kidding? They finished so far down, the last team they played were 9 Gophers. And they lost 8-5.
What's this, Bob?
This is priceless. The only one of its kind in the world, and there won't be any more produced. Museums all over the country want this.
What is it?
Well, here, you read the card.
Well, let's see. A lock of Bing Crosby's hair. Oh, Bob. You're always picking on Bing. I think you're jealous.
Me? Jealous of Porky? Don't be silly. Why should I be jealous? I can do anything he can do except collect old age compensation.
Well, Bob, I think I'd better go over the number I'm going to do on the show tonight.
Okay, let's find the band. They're here someplace rehearsing.
All right.
Now, there's the new kitchen, and there's the den.
Very nice.
And this is the bedroom.
Chloe!
See what I mean?
You know, Bob, I always enjoy singing with Les Brown.
Oh, yeah, he's got a fine band. They're mm-hmm. such hard workers, always rehearsing to get that wonderful music. I think they're in this room.
I raise you $5. I raise you $5.
Okay, I call. What have you got?
I got 5 jacks.
What have you got?
I got 3 jacks. That makes 8 jacks. Something's wrong.
Why?
There are only supposed to be 6.
Somebody deal.
Now, wait a minute. This poker game's been going on for a month. It's disrupting the whole show.
How do you figure, Dad?
What? Oh, no, this couldn't happen to me. Look, every time I look at you, you're playing poker. Not only that, you drag people into your game.
That's a lie. This is a private game. No strangers allowed.
Are you sure?
Sure.
Well, okay.
I raise you $5, General Harkins.
And I raise you 5.
Oh. Say, Peggy.
Oh, Bob.
Yeah, hi.
Truck just delivered these packages for you.
Oh, it must be the stuff I ordered for the house. Let's see.
What's in the other package, Bob?
Oh, those are the new draperies. It's a brand new idea. The colors match the human skin. Here, I'll wrap them around myself and hold them up to my skin. You can see. There.
I beg your pardon. Well, as I live and breathe, Gloria Swanson.
Well, who are you?
I'm the building inspector for the Contractors Association, boy. Jack C. Kirkwood's my name.
Kirkwood? Kirkwood? Didn't I read that a Jack Kirkwood was arrested for swindling this week?
Oh, no. That's Jack P. Kirkwood. I'm Jack C. Kirkwood. People have been making that mistake all week long, thinking I was a swindler.
But you're not, eh?
No. I wonder how they caught Dad.
So you're the building inspector, eh?
That's right, boy. I work for the Happy Homes Contractors Association. Every day I get in my Cadillac and I...
Now, wait a minute. Wait. You're just a building inspector and you drive a Cadillac? You must be loaded.
What?
Loaded?
Yeah, but I'll try not to breathe on you. Yeah. Better get started.
Not so fast. I don't know whether I can trust you around my home.
Oh, boy. What a vulgar allegation. Why, I've inspected the homes of many stars sitting in front of the fireplace serving subpoenas on each other.
Well, I guess you're okay.
Why, of course I am. Now, first of all, boy, who's your contractor?
Well, I don't know whether you've heard of him, Jerry Colonna.
Oh, yes, Colonna. Know him well. We have the same probation officer. Is he around?
No, he had a nasty accident yesterday. He was installing the sink, and his mustache got caught in the garbage disposal unit.
Oh, that's terrible.
No, it isn't. No, a fishing boat picked him up off Santa Monica.
Fishing boat.
Oh, that's champion. But he'll be here next week.
Fine. Now, the main thing I'll do today is to check for fire hazards, and I'll spend the rest of the month on the other thing.
A month? Can't you do it any quicker?
Well, there is one thing that would speed me up. You think about it for a minute. I'll just look out the window.
Wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Oh, why, there's a fine-looking garden. It's so green. What a spot to grow lettuce. I just love lettuce. And look at those birds in your garden. What large bills they have.
Oh, I get it. You want money.
My, but you're bright. I can see the sun shining right through the hole in your head.
Hey, Patty, you can go to jail for taking... You can go to jail for taking money.
How much am I offered?
$10.
Hardly worth going to jail for $10, boy.
$50?
No.
$100?
Cash?
Yeah.
Warden, I'd like a cell with running water, please. Boy, I'm going to start checking for fire.
What a pest he's going to be. Come in.
Hello, Bob.
Well, Corrine Calvet. Look at this. You look wonderful, Corrine.
Well, thank you, Bob. I see they're still fixing your house. Golly, it's upside down.
You look just great, honey.
The whole house is in need of repair.
Oh.
Bob, do you have trouble with your plumbing?
That was me.
I think you're wonderful.
Welcome to the club. By the way, Corrine, how'd you know I was having this work done on my house?
Well, I live only one block from here, and when I go out to take a sunbath, I hear the noise.
You live a block from here and you go out to take sunbaths?
That's right.
No wonder. Yesterday, three of the workmen quit and started digging a tunnel.
Yes, I saw you with a shovel.
Well, the house will be finished soon, and I think it'll appeal to you. It's going to have that continental flavor, you know, Très Charmant, Très Magnifique, Très Hildegard, and a tray of hors d'oeuvres.
I didn't know you could talk French.
Just enough to get myself arrested.
Were you not recently in Paris?
As a matter of fact, I were. And, France is really all they say it was.
Yes, la belle France. Oh, my country suffered a lot, a great deal. You know what I mean. Tonight is all right.
Want to try it over? You just want to leave it there? Go ahead, have another go, girl. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, la belle France. My country suffered a great deal.
How are you doing?
But now it is all right.
Well, I want to tell you, we had a wonderful time over there. You know, I entertained in France. I did quite a few shows there.
You did?
Yes.
Oh, my country still suffers.
I saw. But I don't care what you say, Corrine.
Say, boy, I was just checking for fire hazards and... French pastry.
Kirkwood.
Now, wait a minute, boy. Say, aren't you the lady who takes the sun baths down the street?
Yes, I am. You know me?
Oh, oui. Et vous le français qui dit mot dans les maisons blanches?
Oui, c'est moi. Pourquoi me demandez-vous?
Je vous pense bien jolie si vous voudriez faire notre connaissance.
Well, bien sûr. Peut-être pourrions-nous devenir amis?
Ah, merci, madame.
Merci.
Corrine, what's he saying to you?
He, too, is digging a tunnel.
Look, Kirkwood, stick to business, will you?
I am, boy. And I want to tell you all your doors must be removed. They're fire hazards.
Well, you leave those doors alone. They're specially built out of pickled pine.
What'd you say?
I said pickled.
Yes, I am. I found your liquor closet.
Kirkwood, get lost, will you? We got to rehearse the radio show. Please don't bother us anymore.
Okay, boy.
Bob, is Peggy Lee here yet?
Yeah, she's somewhere around here. Peggy?
Yes, Bob? Oh, hello, Corrine.
Hello, Peggy. How have you been, Corrine?
Fine. Oh, I love your dress. It's so cute.
Say, girls, why
don't
we...
Thank you. It's a new net skirt that can be worn with a tight bodice or sheer wool turtleneck.
Say,
I've got the cutest new nylon tulle apron skirt that's worn with a waist cincher.
I got a new Captain Video Space Patrol suit.
And I love...
Just won't quit. That's
oh,
all.
I love the new padded hip line. Just tons of petticoats.
Say, girls, let's break it up, huh?
Sorry, Bob.
I think we better start rehearsing for the show.
Oh, are we going to do a sketch, Bob?
Yeah, I thought we'd do a scene from My Favorite Spy.
Don't you play the lead in that, Bob?
Well, it's really a double lead. I play the part of a real baggy pants burlesque comic, and then I also play the part of an international spy who is suave, intelligent, dashing, reckless, and very handsome.
Well, you must be great as a burlesque comic.
Thank you. Now, let's rehearse the scene where I've just stolen some secret plans from you, Peggy, and you, Corrine, are making love to me in order to get the plans. Okay, let's get started, Corrine.
Oh, Eric, darling, I just had to see you tonight.
And say, boy, I got to talk to you about
Kirkwood, sit down, will you? We're having a very important rehearsal. Please keep quiet. All right, Kareem.
Oh, Eric, darling, I just had to see you tonight.
Control yourself, you mad young thing.
I waited for you, darling. Needed you. Your eyes, your lips, to feel your strong arms around me once again. Kiss me, darling. Let the spark of my love flame.
Oh, my love. Kirkwood, put Miss Calvey down. Kirkwood, what are you doing?
I got to remove her, boy. This girl's a fire hazard.
Frank Quarkin reminding you to be tuned in next week for another visit with Bob Hope.